due to speak for the family? All right, Ms. Pennell. Okay, you better come up here. I believe. I don't believe you'd be heard. Ms. George Pennell from Asheville.
Mr. James Lambert was our efficient discussion leader, and we had as a resource person on the first day Dr. Hayworth, and we really got deeply into some of the responsibilities of pastors and the church in the matter of family life. We agreed on some of these things after much discussion. The diagnosis of a family problem is quite easy, but to help the family itself is the problem. And when shall the pastor move into a difficult family problem unless he's invited? And then we concluded that if the pastor really sees himself as a representative of God, he can move in with assurance whenever he sees that there is a problem. And after he has made the initial move, then by casual encounters at church, on the street, in the halls, and so forth, he can mention it, but he would never in public discuss the problem or let anyone think that he knew more about the problem than he should. Then we were wondering, as we went further into this, that if pastors too often try to solve all of these problems by themselves, that a doctor doesn't do this. If he is puzzled about a situation, he consults with someone else. And the suggestion was made that maybe there could be a counseling discussion following pastors' conferences each month, and that they would not need to name the person whose problem they were trying to help solve, but that they could just relate the situation, and that by discussing it together and with a pooling of minds, they might be able to resolve it. Then we came to some other conclusions and some other problems that needed conclusions that we didn't reach, but we wondered about counseling. As we counsel with people, how to stick with the relationships rather than think too much about the personalities involved, and several illustrations were given by these pastors in which the personalities were so dominant that that predominated in the situation, and it was hard to look at the problem for the person. We discussed how we could discuss sex education with our teenagers during the withdrawal period that they have towards their parents. And then how can the church best provide counseling classes for marriage, for the divorced, for solo parents, for widows, widowers, as well as young couples. And we came up with these suggestions, that at the Vesper hour on Sunday evening there might be such a class, that there could be a Better Homes Club for young couples, a parents club for the middle years, and a senior citizens club for the older years, and that these classes could have speakers and panel discussions following. And then we discussed a bit about having classes in family living in some of our high schools. We felt it was a profitable group.
Now we have a mother-in-law, son-in-law situation, and that ought to be just right in a family life conference. Brother Brewer from Cary.
I've certainly enjoyed being with my mother-in-law. I sure have. This is the first chance we've had to be together in an occasion like this in some time, and this has been most meaningful to me. In our particular group, we had an interchange of ideas. We spent our time sharing with one another. There was little reaction from the standpoint of just reacting from the idea of agreeing or disagreeing. We accepted what was said, and we felt motivated by what was said. There are two questions that came out. How can we relate what we learned here in these conferences to our churches? We discussed the possibility of the greatest source of relation would be in the area of group learning, group discussions. Then another question that came to mind is to how much initiative should we take? And Dr. Swan Hayworth and Dr. Brooks both helped us in this area. from the standpoint that as pastors primarily, we are shepherds of the sheep, and if one goes astray, then by virtue of our authority, by virtue of the fact that we are pastors, we have the right and we have the calling to go after a person. Now, we may not always bat 1,000, but at least we make some attempt to contact people who are in times of trouble. Then the last thing that I would mention is that we had a very warm experience, and that a person shared with the group something of an experience they had had over the recent years. And we discussed forgiveness. We talked about the fact that people do have problems. People like Moses and David and Simon Peter. And God used them all. This was the most meaningful time for me, and it has stimulated me, and I feel like it has stimulated the other members of the group. I want to thank Dr. Brooks for coming in and being a resource person. I'm so thankful he came in, because I said all I had to say in about 15 minutes as a reaction leader, and he helped out tremendously, and Dr. Hayworth for coming in this last hour. And for this dear person who shared with us her own personal experience.
Thank you. Brother Tom Womble of Bladenburg.
For those of you who may have been a part of another group other than the family life, our first session together was on the process of marriage adjustment and conflict, and Dr. Oates led us in this discussion. And then he served as our resource person in our reaction group. Then last evening, the trends in marriage counseling. And then this morning, the education for family living under the direction of Dr. Swan Hayworth. The reaction that our group had varied from section to section, in that when Dr. Oates came in, he served as such an outstanding resource person that many of the ministers took the advantage of citing to him some personal illustrations and problems that they were dealing with at this particular time, and consumed a great portion of our time, which of course was helpful to us. And from then on, we have moved in many directions. The time that we spent today in trying to summarize what had been done, the suggestions were made that possibly we should go from the generalities to more specifics in this type of unique gathering of people from all over the state, and that this would certainly be a very adequate approach that we might take back to our association, and that we have ministers on the local level who would be very adequate in presenting this type of material. The idea also was brought out that the framework that we now have in our Baptist church seems to be quite adequate to be able to present some of the subjects that we have been talking about in this particular Christian Life Conference. The positive idea that was brought out in our summary was that these programs that we are presenting must be designed to fit the need of our own local situation. That which may be adequate and apropos for your church or your section of the state may not be so for us in our section of the state. But certainly there is something that we can carry over from every one of these ideas. And that is that we must take this truth into the world. We brought this out in several specific ways, that many of our leaders in our section were using their Sunday school to train their prospective teachers and leaders, that selected persons were meeting with the pastor or education director or resource persons to talk about Christian life, that there were opportunities in special life institutes held in the individual churches or associations to allow the people to become acquainted with this opportunity in the Christian life curriculum. On a whole, I believe that our reaction group felt that this was a worthwhile situation, and that it was a opportunity for them to get new ideas and new stimulation to take back home, and with the idea that in the hopes that when we come back together, that we will be able to meet these problems that we have begun to talk about this year in a more specific direction, on the idea that possibly we may be able to open this more to the understanding of laymen, in that we felt that most of the discussions that were carried on in our family life section were designed for the pastor rather than the layman.
Thank you. Last year we had a two-day family life conference. This is somewhat a follow-up, and to keep continued interest, some of you who are interested may let us know your concept or your idea of what we might do in the future that would be of help to you and to your people. It's very difficult to know how to plan, all the way from some who have read most of the books in the field to the multitudes that have read nothing at all and done nothing at all. Somewhere in between is a field that we try to reach. If you have wisdom on it, our suggestions, we will welcome them. Now, the middle one. You recognize the faultiness of the terminology. We just had to designate one from the other. All of this is under the Christian life, but it's like the Methodist, Baptist, and Christian. We called one of them Christian. And so this is the Christian life. Brother Coggins has done a good job. Now, who are the reporters? All right, Jerry? Jerry Potter, our missionary to the deaf.
I think one of the dangers in trying to present a consensus of what a group decided is the fact that you sometimes hear what you want to hear rather than what they're actually saying. And if I seem to report that, I extend my apologies to our group. We had a very good discussion. We were, I think, discussing mostly the numerality and situation ethics. And we came to, I think, several conclusions. I was surprised that we were all pretty well in agreement in our group. And I think these are some of the things that we seem to be saying. First, that decisions or guidelines must be made prior to the actual situation so that a decision can be positive and not merely a reaction under pressure where emotions and personal feelings may be too involved. And we feel that youth needs and wants several things. First of all, open lines of communication between themselves and the, quote, older generation. They also want sincerity, that is, practice what you preach. And then we, I believe, concluded that youth does want guidance in spite of how they might seem to sometime be acting. There was one very profound statement made in our meeting, and I'll try to quote it as it was given, that the new morality is an attempt to apply a Christian concept in a predominantly unchristian environment. And I thought that this does answer a lot of the questions, at least in my own mind, and that agape love can be the supreme guideline, providing that one has a proper understanding of the meaning of love in the agape sense. And then, despite the accusation that the gospel is irrelevant, I got the feeling from our group that we should determine what is right and true and continue to teach it by our actions and words, regardless of whether it seems to be accepted or not, and that ground rules must be taught to young people to assist them in making proper decisions in each situation.
the Julius Corpning of Durham.
Our reaction panel took itself so seriously that it reacted all over the place and never reached any real consensus in terms of what had been presented. There was real divergence of opinion in the group with respect to the numerality. There was considerable divergence of opinion with respect to our response to the resource person and discussion leader. Some of us felt that he was a little bit unfair to the new moralist, that they do have more to say to us than we have really listened to. We were in agreement with him in that as the church, we certainly do not have the initiative in the field of shaping the standards of morality and of guiding ethical action in our society today. And if there was one thing about which there was consensus in our reaction panel, it is at this point that there is considerable agony over the fact that if we indeed did ever have this initiative, that it's gone. In the light of this, what do we have to say to a society that is, relatively speaking, without norms in our time?
Thank you. Now we come on to public affairs, where everything is simple. And who is to speak to the...
We have one more.
Dr. Norfleet Gardner is going to talk about the public affair.
Dr. Pratchett, not about public affairs.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yours is still
one
on
more.
The, one more in the Christian life.
But I was not appointed for this yesterday. We had a very difficult assignment in our reaction on Dr. Oates's discussion last night. And the person who was assigned to report to you, realizing the way in which the group was floundering in its discussion, did not appear this morning. He sent word that he'd gone to the hospital. I'm not sure whether it was for personal treatment or for somebody else's. But anyway, he's not here. And so Jack Coffey asked me to speak. The discussion of Dr. Oates did not center around the printed topic, the place of doubt in the Christian life, which I think we might have handled. But it took a most difficult assignment in extremism. And we all felt that we were really caught. When he introduced his discussion, he stated that extremism was an individual or a group reaction to threat. And with that particular star, Dr. Oates led us to a discussion of the characteristics that mark extremism. And we could follow what he said, I thought, fairly well until we got together. And then we really blew up. Some had read the particular book in which he discussed the matter of extremism, and they had the advantage over the rest of us. But that advantage didn't keep the rest of us from a little argument about the matter as to whether he was talking only about people who were psychotics. And some seemed to think that everybody who was an extremist was certainly a psychotic. Others said, no, it was just merely a neurotic. We finally came to the conclusion, which is no conclusion at all, I'm afraid, for what ought to be given to that discussion, that we weren't sure whether we were psychotics or neurotics, or whether, as someone suggested, it was merely a quirk in our personality.
You can see why we planned ahead of time to not reach any definite conclusions. Now we'll come to the public affairs. Who speaks for our public affairs? Brother Stokes. Andrew Stokes from the trial.
Thank you. The idea that seemed to dominate our reaction panel was that government is here, and big government is here, and is here to stay, and that more and more it will move into areas of life, many areas of our life as a people, and where into areas where the church has had a large ministry and in some instances a predominant ministry. We see that the concern of the church is not to be for the loss of its traditional roles or to be over-concerned with fear for the loss of its freedom, but rather the real concern of the church is to be how to meet the needs of people in our changing culture and with this entrance of government into so many areas of our lives. We saw that the church needs to learn how to be a resource to help people to know how to serve in projects where government is moving into. I think that what we were trying to, what we were seeing and arriving at is that we wanted to learn as a church how to meet the needs of people in government and out of government. But since we were talking about church-state relationships, we were thinking of how can we as a church work alongside with government as it tries to meet the needs of people. The church is in the world. This is our real concern, and as far as church and state relations are concerned, it is certainly a world where government will play a big part, but nevertheless, great opportunities for creative activity are open to the church, and we should search out the needs of people and seek in new and creative ways to try to meet the needs of people in our changing and new world today.
Thank you, sir. Brother James Helvey of Thomasville.
Thank you, Dr. Crouch. In our group, we struggled and grappled with this problem, and not everyone continued with the struggle, so we found that our group sort of varied with its composition. But we were fortunate enough to have Dr. Peterson, Dr. Carlson there to help us with the struggle, and we used them rather extensively. It seems to me that the members of our group came with a variety of needs and preconditions. I think there were some who came hoping that they would find answers to the problem we're facing here in North Carolina concerning our own church institutions and agencies. And I'm not sure that they found the answers immediately that they were looking for. Others came admitting that they were completely blank and ignorant in this field, and they were seeking for information and fuller understanding. And then I think there were a few probably who had perused and grappled with us a little bit, but they were looking for a fuller help and understanding, and found that the issue is quite more complex than we might even have imagined. For example, this concept of the separation of church and state with a wall. It was determined or seen that perhaps this is more of an analogy than a reality, at least in the sense that there is a solid wall. It might be figured or pictured more as a hedge, or at least as a wall with many gates. A rather porous structure, if you want to use the analogy at all. In fact, I appreciated one man's observation that we might think of the church more as a leaven in the loaf in its relationship to the world, rather than being separated by a wall. And in view of this, dealing with this concept, we came to understand that really, if we want to deal with the problems in specific instances, we must clarify and understand the mission of the church and the roles of its agencies in relationship to the government, such as I think was presented briefly for us earlier this morning by Dr. Carlson. And so we came to find out that we simply, in order to deal with our problems, must study more fully. And I think those of us in our group came to appreciate much more extensively men like Dr. Carlson, Dr. Peterson, and Mr. Sapp, who are working on the Baptist Joint Committee on Public Affairs in Washington, D.C. that they are rendering a service to us as Baptists and citizens of a nation, and they will continue to render a service to us as individual citizens and Christians and Baptists here in North Carolina if we will appropriate their resources, if we will continue to study in regard to the problems that we face. And I was not paid for this commercial, but there are a number of pamphlets that they have brought that they say they do not want to take back. And I would commend these to you, if you'll find them out there in the vestibule, to take and to study them and use them in your training union groups or some resource group in your church, because the tremendous need is to study this problem so that we will understand, as Dr. Carlson so well said, that we cannot solve the 20th century problems with 18th century policies.
Now we are right, Brother Dewey Hobbs of Marion.
Two statements from our reaction panel. First, matters that relate to public affairs appear more complex the closer we get to them. For instance, Jim Helvey's reference to the garden and the wall, and Baptists need more opportunities for a face-to-face confronting of the real issues with knowledgeable persons. How good for our group to have been close to the names in this field, Carlson, Peterson, Sapp, that could breathe upon us and talk back. Second, necessary ingredients in this honest facing up include an openness to the issues, a greater use of the resources available through the Baptist Joint Committee on Public Affairs, and a willingness without the attendant guilt to plot new courses in Baptist approaches to the constantly changing, even convulsing scene.
Thank you. Are there others now? Is that the list? I thought we might give a moment of rebuttal to any of these visiting speakers that we may have and see if they have a word. Brother Peterson, Brother Carlson.
No, just a word of appreciation. We're delighted to have this chance to come. You notice we have come three of us out of a four-man staff, which is an indication of how important we think the work you are doing is to our concerns. And we hope that we can stay with you as you struggle with the problem. We look forward to suggestions and ideas. We're getting to the point where we are facing seriously the question how to structure in the local church actual lay involvement. This was the thing that stood out, I thought, in discussion this morning in our particular group, and the question of how to get attorneys, for example, reading some materials that are contemporary and that take into account not only the public concerns of the law, but the church concerns as well. I said in our group this morning that I wish we could get every attorney in the Southern Baptist Convention to read regularly a report from the Capitol for a year. He would make more balanced speeches in the business sessions of the church. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, sir. What he says about laymen puts us in a quandary. We really tried to get some laymen here. We tried on two or three counts. We tried to get you to bring some. Somebody said we ought to plan more for the laymen instead of the preachers. Suppose we had. You help us solve that problem. We've got a lot of problems solved. Now, Brother Coggins, you want a rebuttal?
Just a similar word of appreciation. It's always most refreshing to be in North Carolina and call on if we can be of service.
Thank you. Brother Oates?
I have a feeling of gratitude. Feel that I plowed up the thinking and left them somewhat good place to start. And I don't think that we get very far in trying to do amateur diagnosis of people. I certainly have discussed whether they were psychotic or neurotic. That takes a whole lot of differential diagnosis in case history of an individual. On the other hand, I would say that extremism is a social disease. Governor Sanders said last night, a sort of creeping, insidious social disease. And it, like a lot of the breakdown of the family, indicates my labor society.
Thank you. Dr. Hayworth?
I want to thank you again for inviting me back to North Carolina. Having attended many conferences as a pastor, I become aware of the fact that if a person can pick up one or two ideas at a meeting like this, that he can go back home and try, then it's worthwhile. If a pastor has picked up something in our meeting about just preaching a series of sermons on some of the current family problems that we discussed, or if some special groups could be started, according to some of the lines that we've talked about dealing with particular family difficulties, then I think this would be well worthwhile. And it has been a time not simply to diagnose family situations, but primarily to seek to discover or rediscover the church's responsibility, both in family life education and in counseling. Or to put it in other words, our responsibility both for placing a fence at the top of the cliff and also having an ambulance at the bottom. Both are our responsibility. And I enjoy getting to think of the pressure that goes in our groups about this.
Somebody said a lot of fellows won't like this conference because we didn't give them a sermon outline. We didn't have that in mind. We hope that more and more the concept of the need of the people in your church will get hold of you to where you will want to plan something that will reach them. And out of 3,445 churches, maybe 100, this year, sometime during the year, will have some kind of emphasis on the family. Now, I say that just with a distress note. That isn't a very comfortable margin. Let's see what could be done by way of encouragement, not only in our own church, but in a neighbor's church or in an association. If you have had any ideas, if you have feelings about what could be done statewide or region-wide, or if you have suggestions as to another conference at a future date, drop us a line. We'll welcome your help and your suggestions. Brother Morris has a word.